What's up, everyone? It's your host, DJ Hamilton. In this podcast, talk about DeAndre Ayton signing with the Phoenix Suns. 4 years, $333 million, as they really made a big investment on resigning him. It's now time for him to prove why he was worth that investment and why he was the number one pick in 2018. I got the AL MVP race. I've put three guys: New York Yankees Aaron Judge, Los Angeles Angels Shohei Ohtani, and Houston Astros Jordan Alvarez, who's been out with injury, but he's having one hell of a season. There's probably some other guys in there, but those are the three I talked about. The Jamaicans women's national team qualifying for the World Cup in 2023. Allyson Felix running her last ever track relay. And I think that's pretty much it for the podcast. I hope you guys really enjoy the podcast. I made a shorter podcast than usual. I'm a little rusty since it's been like 3 weeks since I've done one, but hope you guys enjoy the podcast. And yeah, let's do it. So the first thing I want to get into, ladies and gentlemen, is the Jamaican women's national soccer team qualifying for the World Cup, as something the main media doesn't really cover. So I want to cover it on my podcast. So I did an article recently that you guys should go check out. It says the reggae country, as they call it, Jamaica, will be in the World Cup once again for a second straight time, as their women's national soccer team has qualified for the 2023 Women's World Cup after finishing one of the top four finishers in the CONCACAF W Championship. And they just recently, they lost to Canada, sadly, 3-0 on Thursday. And they will play Monday, July 18th at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern against Costa Rica for the third place finish in the Women's Championship. So next year, the World Cup will take place in New Zealand and Australia, which will mark Jamaica's second appearance in soccer's premier tournament. And this comes in wake of youth national player Jadeen Carr being killed on her way to practice on this past Friday, the 15th, I believe, but the 8th, she was killed in a car accident. They made history 3 years ago in 2019 by becoming the first ever Caribbean team to make an appearance in the Cup. Jamaica has always been known for having highly skilled soccer players who love the game, but this team had to go through adversity from struggling to fund the team to the team breaking up in 2008 after failing to qualify for the 2007 World Cup and 2008 Olympics that took place in Tokyo. This team even had to start a GoFundMe to fundraise to have enough money to run a team, to help the players train, have enough equipment to train at the highest level. And players also have to set up fundraisers on the side as well during their own spare time to even raise enough money for them. That's how much of a struggle it's been for a Jamaican women's national team. But they have overcome hard times to now have a chance to play for a World Cup. Forward Kayla McCoy stated her belief in her country's room for growth when she stated, "There's so much higher levels that we can reach with even more investment from back home. So we're kind of excited to see what comes from us qualifying again, because not a lot of people thought we could do it again. I think kind of solidified us into this position, and now people know that we're for real, and we'll begin to invest a bit more." Their coach, Lauren Donaldson, has only been with the team for a month, so he's still learning how to put his players in the best position to succeed. And the Jamaican women's team had also had to deal with a variety of different coaches, from Hugh Menzies, who resigned because of a pay dispute with the federation following the 2019 World Cup, to being replaced by Hubert Busby Jr., who was accused of sexual misconduct while coaching a women's team in Canada, allegations he has denied. And Busby will be dismissed late in 2021 and be replaced by Vin Blaine, who will later be let go by the team after 20 players sent the Federation a letter that they could not support him. And it has been a turbulent ride for this Jamaican women's national soccer team, but if anyone has the perseverance to overcome extreme measures, it is them. McCoy stated it best when she said, "I think the important thing for us as a group is that we stuck together through everything and we overcame those challenges. The women on this team have had each other's back from the start and from the beginning, and I think that the group that we have and the family that we have is what has kept us going through all of this and what has kept us kind of overcoming those obstacles. Being resilient is what they would need to continue to do as they try to pursue their first ever World Cup title. Can the reggae girls do it?" as yet to be seen. One thing that you guys should not do is count them out. I'm Jamaican. I wasn't born in Jamaica, but I'm Jamaican and American. And one thing, Jamaicans, you never kept them out, man. When they say they're going to do something and they put their mind to something, they're going to try their very best and they're going to give 110% effort. And I just want to give some coverage to them because main media, they don't really cover this. And I want to do an article on it because some of my friends are like, wow, this is amazing. Like, the main media isn't even covering this. And I just found this out now. Like, good job on covering this. And I felt really proud about it. And I just want to share with you guys. So congrats to the women's national team on qualifying for the second straight World Cup. And we'll see what they ultimately do next year in New Zealand and Australia.
Driven deep into right center field. That ball is gone. Oh, what a shot by Judge against the back of the Yankee bullpen wall. 4-2 Reds.
Wow. Michael, that was a line drive. That wasn't a high arcing fly ball. That's Aaron Judge. And again, there's only a few guys in the major leagues, Stanton being one, Aaron Judge being one, that can take a ball deep in the strike zone and hit a line drive off the back of the bullpen.
Unreal.
Ohtani drives that down the right field line. Help yourself out, big fella. One run comes in. Stassi scores. Ohtani digging for third. A two-run triple. Marsh scores. 3-0 Halos. Come on.
So now let's talk about some baseball, ladies and gentlemen. It's been a while since I talked about baseball on this podcast, but I want to talk about the AL MVP race. There's like a trio right now. We got Aaron Judge, Yordan Alvarez, who will be out for 10 days. I forgot what kind of injury, but he'll be out for a week and a half or so. So that's going to hurt his MVP case. And we have Shohei Ohtani. So you have Aaron Judge, the right fielder of the New York Yankees, who are having a tremendous season. Yordan Alvarez of the Houston Astros, I believe. And Shohei Ohtani of the Los Angeles Angels. Aaron Judge, it's been a season New York Yankee fans have been waiting for a long time. They're currently 62-28. They have the best record in the AL, which is the American League by far. Like, the closest team is the 58-31 Astros. Like, the Yankees are playing at a World Series type of pace right now. If they keep this up into the postseason, they can be doing really well. But right now, they've been struggling in the last 10 games. They're 4-6 in the last 10 games. They need to get back up to their winning ways, but they've been playing really well, and Aaron Judge is a big reason why they are playing so well. Aaron Judge, because I wrote this article a few days ago, so things, their stats have kind of changed a little bit, so I'm going to read from Baseball Reference. So Aaron Judge has been having a tremendous season, and he has 31 home runs. He's on pace to hit over 60 home runs, which will be the first time since the MLB has been testing players for steroids since 2003 that somebody has hit 60 home runs or more in a season. That's amazing. He has 332 at-bats. He has 66 RBIs. He is hitting a .274 batting average, a .354 OBP, which is on-base slug percentage. Yep, if I'm not mistaken. A .596 slugging percentage. And a .950 OPS, which is pretty amazing. He has been otherworldly. He's a unique unicorn. We've never seen someone this size, this athletic, playing baseball. 6'7", 282 pounds, chiseled, can run with the best of them. He can do it all. And the fact that the Yankees are having their best season probably in years is a testament to his greatness. Of course, he has great teammates around him, but they're sitting at the top of the AL East because of him. And he can win his first MVP of his career. He's been a perennial All-Star. He was named the All-Star again this season. He got elected to be in the Home Run Derby, but I don't think he's going to participate in it. But, man, this guy's having one hell of a season. And the Yankees are on pace to win over 115 games if they keep winning at their current rate. If they kind of get out their slump they've been in the last 10 games, he's a big reason why they could potentially win the World Series this year and why he can win his potential first AL MVP award. So Aaron Judge is a name to look out for as the season continues to go on. Yordan Alvarez is a Cuban hitter and left fielder for the Houston Astros. He just suffered an injury, I believe. I forgot what kind of injury. I think to his wrist. Oh, his hand. He has been having inflammation in his hand, so he'll be out for at least a week and a half or so. But he's been having a tremendous season as well for the Houston Astros, who are the second best team in the AL East or the AL Conference in general. And I'm going to look up his averages right now on baseballreference.com. So he has 82 hits this season. He has 26 home runs, 60 RBIs. He has a batting average of .306, a OBP of .405, a slugging percentage of .653, a OPS of 1.058, which is really good, a OPS plus of 196. And his total bats he has been at is 175. So he's been very productive whenever he's been at bat, and he's been one of the best defensive players in the league. He is truly a tremendous player, and he's the reason why the Astros are where they're at. He was the betting odds favorite, according to Sportsnet.com, before he got hurt. Like, just as recently as July 6th, like 10 days ago, as we record this on July 16th, he was the favorite to win the award. But since he got hurt, those odds have kind of slid down. And now my third player is the reigning AL MVP, Shohei Ohtani, the star pitcher and arguably the best two-way player in the game of the Los Angeles Angels, who unfortunately are not that much of a contender, unfortunately. And Ohtani, the Angels' record, they're under 500. So right now they are 39-52, which is well below 500. They're a subpar team. But Ohtani's so special, and one thing about baseball, they don't really care about your winning record. They really, for the MVP award more than any other sport, they care about your stats. How dominant are you? That's what they really care about. It's different from baseball than it is from the other three major sports like NFL, NBA, and NHL. They want to look at your individual numbers and how dominant you are. So Ohtani, some of his numbers are down this season than they were from last season. His batting average is down from .257 to .255. His OBP is down from .372 to .347. His slugging percentage is down from .592 to .486. And OPS is down from .965 to .833. But he's still doing great things. He has 19 home runs of the season, 56 RBIs. Strikeouts. Let me see how many strikeouts he has. Because he's been... He has, I don't know how many strikeouts. He has 91 strikeouts, and he had 189 last season, and there's still a whole half of a season left to play for him. So he can potentially even break his strikeout record from last season, and that's pretty amazing. Ohtani is the reigning AL MVP, and he's just someone we've never seen before. It's sad that he's 28. If he was younger, we would have a whole another 15 years of him. But he's 28 years old. If he can keep this up for another 5 to 8 year stretch, he'll be in the Hall of Fame. And especially if he could start, like, they could put pieces around him and help them win. Him and Trout. Because him and Trout are some of the best baseball players we've ever seen. But the fact that they were an organization that's not winning, they haven't won pretty much... And the times Trout has been there, which is why Trout is not really considered the best player in baseball anymore. And nobody really talks about him as much anymore. But Ohtani was just named the All-Star again as the only player to be designated as a hitter and pitcher in an All-Star game twice. No player in MLB history has ever done it even once. That's how special of a player he is. So, with the first half of the season almost completed with the July 19th All-Star game right around the corner, in a few days actually, who do you have as your AL MVP favorite, you baseball fans out there? Is it Yankee hero Aaron Judge, Houston's Jordan Alvarez, or the unicorn Japanese angel that is Shohei Ohtani? Or perhaps it could be someone else. There's definitely other players that are playing amazing this season. And this has been a really tremendous, interesting MLB season. So altogether, it should be an exciting race as we prepare for the second half of the MLB season. And... I think Aaron Judge is going to win it. If Aaron Judge doesn't get injured and the Yankees keep winning, he's my favorite to win it. The record disparity between him and Ohtani is just too big. His stats are pretty much where Ohtani's is. Ohtani's not having that, like, groundbreaking, transcendent season he did last season. He's still having a great season, but it's not the same, like, extraordinary level that we saw last year. So, And then Jordan Alvarez is out injured. But there's definitely probably some other contenders that I don't know of. But you got to give it to Aaron Judge, man. I think Aaron Judge, the way the Yankees have been playing, he's been putting New York on the map. They're winning at a high, high rate. You got to give it to Aaron Judge. So if my AL MVP choice was, if I had to choose, I'm choosing Aaron Judge. Continuing on with some more baseball. The MLB and MLBPA remain about $80 million apart on the international draft money, according to ESPN staff writer Alden Gonzalez. There's a deadline to agree on the international draft, only 10 days away. The Major League Baseball and the MLBPA Players Association remain far apart when it comes to the amount of money that will be guaranteed to amateur players. The league submitted a counterproposal to the union this past Friday that allocated for $181 million in guaranteed spending for the top 600 international players in the inaugural 2024 draft. The same amount that was proposed in March, and roughly an $80 million difference from what the Players Association submitted last week. The league also remains adamant that a 20-round international draft must include hard slots, meaning teams must pay the designated amount for each pick so as to eliminate the early deals that have run rampant throughout the international market over the past half decade. The union, which wants to allocate at least $260 million to the top 600 international players, refused the premise and wants to give players flexibility to go above slot values that will be set as a minimum, allowing teams to exceed their designated slots by up to 20% before incurring the loss of a draft pick. The league also wants to remain firm on a $20,000 maximum for undrafted free agents, and the union is asking for $40,000. The two sides are facing a July 25th deadline, hey, my birthday, to agree on some form of an international draft, which MLB has sought for the better part of the past two decades. And in exchange, MLB has offered to get rid of the qualifying offer system, which consists of the market for a handful of mid to upper tier free agents every offseason. And that if both sides can agree, the international market and qualifying offer system will remain status quo or basically uncleared. So the MLB, the union, believes international players should be guaranteed significantly more money so as to align more closely with the domestic draft, which will see teams spend nearly $300 million on amateur players for the United States, Canada, and Puerto Rico this year. Both sides will continue to try to negotiate an extension of the July 25th deadline, but that's very highly unlikely given the need for teams to know ahead of the August 2nd trade deadline whether the qualifying offer system will remain in place. So in my opinion, I think the MLB should, I would like to see more international players in the league. It can help grow the game more, draw more viewers from around the world to make it more of a global game, similar to how you see the NBA, how you have so many players from all different sides of the world, different parts of this planet, from Africa to Spain to France, domestically here in the United States, of course, Australia. If you have those type of players from all different types of backgrounds, different unique types of games, it could bring more fan interest and more revenue. And that's what you want as MLB. You guys have been suffering for a long time. You guys haven't really been that popular of a sport in the mainstream media and types of coverage since like the late 90s. And NFL and NBA have been reigning supreme since the turn of the century. The NBA and NFL have been dominating the ratings. MLB, you've been way behind. Even NHL, excuse me, I believe, has better ratings than baseball does. NHL this season was very, very popular. The Stanley Cup, everybody's paying attention to the playoffs. What are you going to do as a league to help bring more fan interest and bring more attraction to your league that once was? The last baseball topic I want to talk about is star Washington Nationals outfielder Juan Soto has declined a 15-year, $440 million contract offer from the Nationals. Two-time All-Star, a World Series champion, a two-time Silver Slugger Award winner, NL batting champion in 2020, and a three-time All-MLB selection. The Nationals will now look to trade him. They're opening the listening trade offers for Soto. Damn, that's a big time. That's rejecting a lot of money. Let's do the math, ladies and gentlemen. 440 divided by 15 is $29.3 million a year. That's a lot of money. And now that he has declined this offer, the Nationals will look to trade their star outfielder, who's only 23 years of age. He told ESPN earlier this year that he declined a 13-year $350 million offer prior to the offseason lockout, and he'll be eligible to become a free agent after the 2024 season. And since he turned down this offer, if he would have accepted it, it would have been the largest offer in baseball history, the largest contract ever, and he just rejected it. According to The Athletic, which first reported on the most recent rejected contract offer, the Nationals are now looking for trade offers, and some team officials are no longer believe they will be able to reach any long-term deal with Soto. If Soto were to consider taking an extension from the Nationals, it would have been one of significant length, and like I said, it would have been $29.3 million a year, and will rank only 15th among players based on their 2022 salaries. The decision to listen to potential trades for Soto represents a change of plans for the Nationals after President of Baseball Operations and General Manager Mike Rizzo said last month that the team will not move the 23-year-old star. And he stated that just on June 1st on 106.7 on The Fan, when he made it clear to his agent and to the player that we are not trading Juan Soto. The expected return in a Soto trade will jump start a Nationals rebuild. They are 30-62 this season. They are dead last in the National League East by 14.5 games and are on track for a third straight losing season after winning the World Series back in 2019. Another issue that will affect Soto's future in Washington is the potential sale of the team by the Lerner family, who have owned the Nationals since 2006. And his family said in April that they are exploring the possibility of selling the Nationals and had hired a firm to find potential investors to buy part or all of the franchise. He was named an All-Star for the second straight season. He's hitting a career low .247 batting average in 2022 with 19 home runs and 42 RBIs in 89 games, and he'll be set to compete in Monday's Home Run Derby. The MLB trade deadline is August 2nd, and there could be some potential moves very quickly if the Nationals can find a deal to potentially trade the young 23-year-old star. This is surprising news. That's a lot of money he needs to turn down, man. But he's 23 years old. He's very young. He's already a champion, so he doesn't have the pressure of trying to come over the hump of being named the champion. He already has that on his belt. But if I'm him, he's looking for a winning situation. That's what these athletes are trying to strive for. They're trying to win at the highest level. And the fact that they went from World Series champions to now three straight losing seasons, that probably has played a major part of why he doesn't want to sign there for over a decade and a half. Because by the time that contract were to end, he'll be damn near the end of his career. He'll be 38 years old. If he were to sign that contract and stay there the whole 15 years, he'll be 38 years old. He'll be near the end of his career, probably retiring. So Soto's looking at that and trying to go to a team where he can contend for World Series titles again, as this team has really gone in the wrong direction since they won the world title 3 years ago. And I don't blame him for wanting to take control of his career. That's something we have seen athletes do over the last decade now. Well, LeBron James leading the way in 2010 when he took the decision, as they name it, in 2010 to go join Miami Heat to take control of his career to win championships. Because he tried 7 years in Cleveland that first stint, and they went to the finals in 07, but they never put the right supporting cast around him to ultimately contend for a title. Soto, I'm not saying he's LeBron James, but he's still a great player in his respective sport. He's one of the best outfielders in the game and best players in the game. But now that this team has really been struggling to win the last few years, he's looking to go to a situation where he can ultimately contend to win again. So we'll see what ultimately happens. Can he get dealt before the trade deadline? That's something to be seen. Excuse me. As the trade deadline is August 2nd, which is not too far away. That's like 2.5 weeks from now. So there are some potential moves that could be going on. There could be some talks going on behind the scenes. There's definitely, in the next few days, there's going to be a lot of articles coming out on what potential suitors there can be for Soto and his services, what teams could potentially make a deal. But Soto, I don't blame him for wanting to leave. He wants to win. They've been losing a lot now the last few years since being named champions. And it's going to be ultimately interesting to see where one of the best MLB players in the league ultimately goes and what impact he can make on that team that ultimately gets him, whether he gets dealt this year or next season, or even if he has to wait out the rest of his contract. So we'll see what ultimately happens, and we look forward to seeing where Soto ultimately ends up. We're going to take a quick break, ladies and gentlemen, but coming back from the break, talk about the DeAndre Ayton. Where will he go as the Phoenix Suns have matched Indiana Pacers' offer 4 years, $133 million for young star center services? He's been averaging 17-10 over his career, and he's a very versatile center. He can guard, very athletic. He's not a dominant force like I want him to be. I feel like he can still take levels to his game that can get better. When he getting into that. Allyson Felix running her last race in track and field. That's coming up next on the EJ Sports Show.
Okay, Sabrina, I see you.
Where do you want this at, Chris?
Wait, what?
Is this one of your State Farm commercials?
Yeah, sure is.
Jake from State Farm?
Did they not send you all the scripts?
No.
Chris smiles and says, "Wild love, State Farm's surprisingly great rates." Then suddenly his body turns into a basketball. Come on, this stuff is...
Chris?
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And we're back, ladies and gentlemen. I want to talk about Allyson Felix, one of the best track and field athletes we ever had, as she capped her final appearance at Track World Championships with a bronze medal in the 4x400-meter mixed relay. Even though she got passed by at the end of her last sprint around the track, which is probably indication of why she's retiring, she still ended up with a bronze medal, even though I know she was trying to strive for that gold, especially in the last one. But man, it's been an incredible career. Her 15 memorable seconds Friday night at the World Championships, Allyson Felix was sprinting alone in the sunshine, cruising past the stands, way ahead of the field down the back stretch. A few minutes later, she was taking her newly won prize and hanging it around her 3-year-old daughter's neck. She stated, "I felt the love and I felt joy running tonight." She's now 36 years of age and she looks to move on to different endeavors in her life, such as taking care of her daughter and whatever comes next in her post-track career. It was no huge shock that the runner, 11 years her junior, Marilady Polino of the winning Dominican Republic team, eventually wheeled her in. No big shame either that the U.S. saved the rest of its vaunted star power for big races over the next 9 days of this meet, and they finished third in the mixed 4x400-meter relay, also behind the Netherlands. The third-place finish still gave Felix her 19th medal at World Championships throughout her career, extending a record she already held. Adding to the 11 she's taken at the Olympics, she'll end her career with an even 30 at her sport's biggest events. Some might say a bronze medal feels like a letdown for one of the most decorated sprinters in U.S. history, but others, including Felix herself, have compared the medal she won in the women's 400 last year at the Tokyo Olympics, a medal she ranks as one of her most cherished triumphs. "It's a similar emotion. The last couple of years, I stepped outside of just the clock and the medals, and I never would have imagined that would have been a place where I would come to." She was once a shy teenager who is now an outspoken advocate for women and moms, both in and out of sports. Much of that has come from becoming a mom herself, then fighting eventually even Nike, which got her salary while she was pregnant with her child. She also had an emergency C-section 8 weeks short of her due date, and it left both her and her daughter, Cammy, fighting for survival in a hospital room. Any running at all, let alone medals to go with it, feels like a bonus at this point. "There's not one single story that can explain the impact that she had on the sport," said Elijah Godwin, who ran the first leg and was the last teammate to hand the baton to Felix. "Over the span of the year she did it, she became an icon. And for us to come out and compete with her, it's a blessing to have the opportunity." Even Google got into the act. A search of Felix's name brought all of her credentials overlaid by an animation of her sprinting across the computer screen, followed by the words "Olympian Mother Advocate," which I even saw now because I just Googled her name and it showed like a little Bitmoji or whatever of her with a 20 on the icon, and it was amazing to see that. She's really one of the greatest to ever do it. And I just want to congratulate her on an amazing, outstanding, iconic career. One of the best we will ever see. And kudos to her, man. The U.S. finished in 3:10.16. The stat sheet said Felix ran her final 400 meters in 15 seconds, excuse me. And it's nowhere near the 47.72 second split she ran in a gold medal 4x400 at Worlds in 2015. Still the fastest ever by an American woman, but that was hardly the point. It just feels like we're part of history, Godwin said. And to have a picture with her, that's the most important to me. I just want my picture with her and to be remembered for this. Felix's last medal capped an opening day that also featured heats in the men's 100. An American, Fred Curley, last year's Olympic silver medalist, finished his race in 9.79 seconds, a blazing fast time for a preliminary round that was only 0.03 off his season high and was 0.01 faster than Italian Marcelo Jacobs' victory last year in Tokyo. So, man, Allyson Felix, what else needs to be said? 36 years of age, 5'6", 126 pounds, soaking wet. One of the greatest Olympian athletes we've ever seen. She has a 7 first place Olympic gold medals, 3 second place, 1 third place in Olympic Games, 13 first place World Championship gold medals, 3 second place finishes, 3 third place finishes, and 1 World Indoor Championship first place finishes. That's amazing. That's otherworldly. She has gold medals in the Olympics at Beijing, London, Rio in 2016, in Tokyo again in 2020, silvers in Athens, Beijing, Rio. She's done it all, man. In World Championships, she's done it in Helsinki, Osaka, and I just want to give her kudos. Congrats on an amazing career, and we can't wait to see what you do in your retirement. So the last topic I want to talk about before we close up the podcast, ladies and gentlemen, is the Phoenix Suns have re-signed their star big man, DeAndre Ayton, to a 4-year, $133 million deal, which will keep him in Phoenix for the next few seasons. And general manager James Jones expressed his excitement re-signing Ayton to a new contract when he stated DeAndre is a force on both ends of the floor who has elevated his game every year and will continue to do so. DA is so important to what we do, and without him, we could not have reached our recent levels of success. We are excited to keep DeAndre at home in the Valley where he belongs. Ayton is a 7-footer who's 250 pounds and is coming off one of the best seasons, probably the best season of his career thus far. He averaged 17.2 points per game, which is a career high for him, and a franchise record, 63.4% from the field, and add on 10.2 rebounds per game, which ranked in the NBA's top 10 in both field goal percentage and rebounds per game for the second consecutive season of his career. He recorded both his 3,000 career point and 2,000 career rebound this past season, which makes him the second fastest player to reach these milestones in the Suns uniform, behind only the great Charles Barkley. He stated his excitement after stating, "I'm happy to put free agency behind me and ready to work and compete for a championship with my teammates." Through his first four NBA seasons, Ayton has career averages of 16.3 points per game on 60% from the field, plus 10.5 rebounds, a block per game, and 236 games with the Suns thus far. His 59.9% field goal percentage is the highest by a player averaging a double-double through their first four seasons in NBA history, joining Barkley and the great Shaquille O'Neal as the only players to average a double-double on at least 57% shooting from the field through their first four seasons. Through his 35 career playoff games over the last 2 years, he's averaging 16.5 points per game on 65% from the field and 10.7 rebounds in those games, the only player ever to average at least 15 points and 10 rebounds on over 60% through his first 35 career postseason games, according to NBA.com. DeAndre Ayton, ladies and gentlemen, is one of the greatest, not one of the greatest, but he's one of the best young bigs in the league right now. I feel like he still has another gear he can get to that when he was coming out of college in 2018, and I've been watching him since he was 15 years old when he was in high school, I saw the franchise talent that he was, that he can be. He needs to tap into that assertiveness and that will to dominate every single game. He's too passive for me. He's like the big man version of Andrew Wiggins. So much, all the talent in the world. But is he has all the talent to be a guy who could be a number one option or number two. But he doesn't have the mentality of a number one. He should be giving me 20
5 and 12 a game. He has that capability. He has a jump shot. He can hit free throws. He has a midi game. I want to see him be able to stretch his range out the three-point range more to kind of get more implemented with the modern game. But, man, he has all the tools. He can guard multiple positions. He knows how to, he can move his feet. He's chiseled. He has a great NBA body. He's a man on the boards. And he's a solid. He's become a much better defender since when he first came to the league. When he first came to the league, he was a terrible defender. But over the last two seasons, he has really made strides on that end of the floor. Thanks in due part to Monty Williams, who's a great head coach, and their leader and pit bull point guard, Chris Paul, who has definitely been DeAndre Ayton's ear on anchoring that end of the floor for the Phoenix Suns. But this guy, I feel like he has another year he can get to. He has yet to make an All-Star game or All-NBA team. And he's going to year 5 now. When he came to the league, I thought he had Hall of Fame potential. I still think he can. But if he doesn't make the All-Star game or All-NBA team this year, and if I'm him, I'm striving to make both. He has the talent to be a Hall of Famer and all-time great. But he needs to take that next step. Now that the Suns have given him this type of money, and they're trusting him, and they think he's a guy who they could build around for the next 5 years, along with Devin Booker, as Chris Paul continues to age. Ayton, they made an investment in you. They trusted you. They matched the offer sheet so you wouldn't go to the Pacers. Now you need to prove to them that they were right in their investment in you. And the Suns last year, they were one of the best teams last year during the regular season. 5th in points. They were 10th in total rebounds, in large part due to Ayton. 4th in assists. They were 7th in turnovers. They were really good at taking care of the ball. 1st in field goals made. 1st in field goal percentage. 6th in true shooting percentage. And 5th in the offensive rating. So they were one of the best teams offensively in the league that we've seen during the regular season. And defensively, let's check according to lineups.com. They were also not shabby as well. They were one of the top 10 defensive teams in the league. 8th in points allowed. 2nd in assists allowed. 6th in steals. 7th in field goals allowed. 14th in defensive rebounds. And 3rd in opponent field goal percentage. And they were 20th in defensive rating. They weren't like a terrible defensive team, but they were a solid defensive team according to the metrics. And DeAndre Ayton had a big impact on both ends of the floor. So, Phoenix Suns, man, they finished with the number one best record in the entire league last season, but it didn't result to a championship, which is what their ultimate goal is, especially after reaching the finals last season. They were up 2-0 last season, and they lost 4 straight to the Bucks. So everybody had them as their favorites to make it this year, but that didn't come to reality. But, man, we'll see what happens. They have DeAndre Ayton back. Devin Booker's going to be there for the next 5-6 years. He signed another extension, 2-year extension added on. So I think he's there for the next 6-7 years, I believe, Devin Booker. And then Chris Paul, I think, he's signed under contract for another 2 or 3 years, if I'm not mistaken, something like that. So they have their big three all signed and set for the next few couple seasons. And we'll see if the Phoenix Suns can bring home a championship, the first in franchise history, as Ayton. And Ayton, man, I want to see you become one of the top 4 bigs in the league. There's no reason you should not be better than Rudy Gobert. Rudy Gobert is one of the best defensive big men we've ever seen, but there's no reason you should not be better than Rudy Gobert. I can see, okay, you're not better than Joel Embiid or Nikola Jokic or Giannis or Anthony Davis when he's right, because those four are different. But Rudy Gobert doesn't have the offensive game that you have. He doesn't have your shooting touch. He doesn't have a mid-range game like you do. If you can assert your will, become more of a dominant force offensively, and continue to be the solid defender you've been over the last two seasons, there's no way you're not better than Rudy Gobert. And I want to say, DeAndre Ayton, he needs to assert his will into the All-NBA conversation, make All-NBA team next season, and make the All-Star game for the first time in his career. It's time to show why you were the number one pick in the 2018 draft, ahead of Luka Doncic, ahead of Trae Young. Those guys have become All-NBA players, perennial All-Stars. It's time for you to add your name to that list. You have the talent. You have the physical tools. Now I want to see you use it. So Phoenix Suns made a big investment in him for the next couple seasons, and we'll see if it ultimately results in a championship for the franchise. Well, that's going to do it for the podcast, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. I wanted to make it shorter than usual, as I'm trying to shake the rust off a little bit since it's been a few weeks. But they ain't signing, man. I really hope this guy becomes the dominant big guy I expected him to be when he first came into the league out of college and when I saw him in high school. I want to see him assert his will. He has the potential to be a Hall of Famer and an all-time great. He's compared to David Robinson coming into the NBA. Those were his comparisons. David Robinson, like, he has the build, he has the physical tools, and he has this the touch at the rim, everything. It's all a matter of his mentality. If he can take his mentality to be a dog and dominate and dunk the ball more, I don't want to see him lean it up. I want to see him assert his will and try to yam it on his defenders. Use that 7-foot, 250-pound frame that you have. But AL MVP race 2 is down to the wire. All-Star game is tonight, July 19th, as I speak. I know I recorded the AL MVP race a few days ago, but those guys are having unbelievable seasons, and it's going to be down to the wire. There might be some other candidates as well who are also in the race, but those are the three I want to focus on. And Felix, man, Allison Felix, one hell of a career. Salute again. And she's one of the greatest Olympians we've ever seen. So I hope you guys enjoy this podcast. Make sure you shout out to your friends. I'm on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts. Check out my website, djsportshow.com. You can find me on there. And make sure you guys shout out the website, man. I'm trying to grow bigger and bigger. Check out my shop, too. I have clothing on there with my own logo. And I hope you guys really shout out the podcast and website as I continue to try to grow. And, yeah, I hope you guys enjoy this episode. It's been your host, DJ Hamilton. I'll see y'all next time.